Good morning, good afternoon, or depending on your place on Earth, good evening. Welcome to Decrypting AI from the Emerge team at Decrypt. I'm Ryan Ozawa, and I am joined by Intrepid, soon to be on the road, on the front lines, in Los Angeles, Jason Nelson. How are you doing?
You know us, this party never stops.
Of course, 24/7. Very quickly, what are the events you are looking at today?
There's two blockchain events at USC today. One is put on by VanEck, one of the Bitcoin ETF issuers that we all have heard of. And then the other one is by OKX. They're happening at the same time, so I'm not quite sure how that's supposed to work, but I'm gonna try to make it work.
I love it. As any good journalist, you're going to be in 2 to 3 places at the same time. Well, we've got some AI stories to cover. One of these days we'll expand into our longevity topics, but you know, Brian Johnson hasn't done anything completely shocking lately. Let's start with games. What's going on with AI and NPCs?
Well, Ubisoft yesterday announced that they were at GDC in San Francisco, their new AI-generated NPC creator called Neo NPC. And basically what it is, it uses generative AI to make the NPC smarter. And then you can interact with them on a more personal level.
Sure.
In most games, when you talk to an NPC, it has a set bit of dialogue and you can't really stray from that dialogue. But with this, you can actually hold a conversation with an NPC. So for example, everyone who ever wanted to have a real interaction with Pan Am Palmer from Cyberpunk 2077, once this is a minute, you can't. Just keep it so moving, people. Keep it PG. Right.
So, you know, I'm thinking like the Ryan Reynolds movie, Free Guy. I mean, all the different ways to kind of explore the concept of these soulless NPCs that you want to have more personality. You might fall in love with one of them, for example. But I mean, I feel like this is talked about, has been talked about endlessly. Is there a particular thing about Ubisoft's approach, or is it that they're going to be one of the first? They're not even putting it in a game yet. So what's exciting about this announcement specifically?
Well, they're just demoing it, but I think what's exciting about it is a video game character being able to interact with you in real time as you would another player. Mm-hmm. A lot of these games, a lot of games are going multiplayer, most games aren't. So you're not talking to anybody else. But this will allow you to have the same interaction with a video game character as you would with another person once they work all the kinks out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think I like the quote in the story from a game writer or a developer who was like, to be able to do this, to basically give a backstory, like this person that you're going to run into in a coffee shop is a frustrated painter who doesn't want to be a barista, and is addicted to anime, right? And you could have a completely free-flowing conversation. Like with other NPCs, you might ask them questions that they just don't have an answer to, and they just keep giving you the same response. Like, I don't want to talk to you anymore, basically. But now you could lose an entire day. Like, actually, I really like talking to this Starbucks barista because he's an artist like me, and we have the same frustrations about the capitalist society in which we live. Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool.
I think where the interesting part will come from really is when you start talking to the bad guys. Like, you know, you have this character you're supposed to defeat, but what happens if that character starts to try to turn you to their way of thinking?
Ah, yeah.
That is going to be interesting.
I can see that. All right. Well, let's bring up our next story here as I try to figure out these buttons because I'm slow. Now, this was a long keynote, the NVIDIA keynote at, what was the conference, GDC or something? And you, my dear friend, had to watch the whole thing.
I'm going to give you a hat tip on this one because I think you kept me from throwing my monitor out of the window trying to work through this thing.
Right.
Because he went on for like 2.5 hours.
It was, I would say almost everything he said was impressive. Now, usually you just expect like, here's our corporate partners and whatever, but he has he's a fun personality. He makes quippy jokes that probably aren't in the script. He goes off script periodically. Like, he kept my interest for sure. Although, you know, 2.5 hours is a long time to talk. It's a pretty good article. You can check it out at Decrypt. But what were your personal favorite takeaways from the things that he shared?
Well, I'm really big on the development of humanoid robots, and especially the ones that are AI powered to basically function on their own. I think for most people who have some type of thought about robotics and AI, you know, because we have the whole 100 years worth of Hollywood movies telling us about it, that's where you're going to see the most, I think, on the surface, wow and fear around this technology. Because sure, ChatGPT is smart, but as soon as I close my browser, it goes away. This thing's going to be walking around my house. You know, it's like, and what he showed was that, or what the NVIDIA CEO showed was their way of programming these robots. It's called Jetson Thor, which I thought was interesting because Jetsons.
That's cool. Yeah. And Thor.
Right? Yeah. And Thor, right? Not sure the Thor connotation. I need to look that up. But Jetsons, 100%. And basically, they have this technology that can put an AI through a virtual real world scenario. They actually showed that it's called like, it's in their Omniverse platform, where it's like mirrored, like almost down to like minute detail, real world environments. And they train these things in that environment to later be deployed in physical places. And I thought that was very interesting. And he actually brought a few of them on stage and they were walking around and, you know, mingling amongst themselves. It was like, it was weird because not physically being there, a part of your brain is thinking this is fake.
Right.
But it was in the middle of a stadium full of people. So obviously it wasn't fake. But I think that's that uncanny valley kicking in. You know, like, okay, come on. How real is this? He even had, like, little Star Wars-like droids walking around.
Yeah. Disney shout-out. Very cool. Yeah. And talking to them. And it was almost like, just almost like watching it in a movie, for sure.
Yeah. And it was very interesting, kind of scary. But it shows you how far we've come in a relatively short amount of time. I mean, he even said artificial general intelligence is only 5 years away. I mean, that's most people put it at decades.
Yeah,
that's pretty aggressive. But he also showed his, what's it called? The Blackwell chip.
Right.
And the Blackwell chip is like 5 times more powerful than GPT-4. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, there you go. There's your 5 years right there. You know, it was very impressive.
Well, he talked a lot about the Omniverse, the virtual world, and specifically kind of overlaying it on a real world facility and how you could use AI and this this design tool, which works in Apple Vision Pro, by the way, and just sort of walk around a factory floor that you can design. You can use AI to optimize the placement of humans and machines. And he even talked about partnering with Siemens, which does its own a great deal of industrial design, but then partnerships with like Mercedes and other automotive companies. So you could, it wasn't just theoretical. Like, he's saying these things are being done. And, but I mean, going back to what you said about humanoid robots, I think I agree that that's a great obsession to have. And the idea that we do this might seem like, oh, we're trying to recreate robots in our own image, but it makes practical sense because rather than redesigning a factory to work with however a robot might end up designed in a vacuum, you're saying, well, just put a robot where a human would normally be and just shape it like a human. So, I mean, that makes sense, but it also makes it creepy.
Well, and I think that moves well into our next story. It was Mercedes-Benz is actually using... Actually, we have two stories that could fit into that. We have Mercedes-Benz... Mercedes-Benz partnered with Aptronik, Austin-based AI developer Aptronik, to develop AI robots for their Mercedes-Benz factories. And humanoid robots, they stand about 6 feet tall. Here's a picture of one. This is actually what it looks like from the Aptropic website. And it can either be, you know, stationary, put on a stand, or it can be, it has legs so it can walk around. And it's about the same size and same frame as a human. So you don't really need to make any major changes to the factory to accommodate it. Probably just, you know, places for it to charge. Because I believe they said it has a 4-hour battery life. So you get a lot done in 4 hours when you don't have to stop.
You know? I suppose, but why isn't this thing just plugged in? But I mean, yes, you want it to, I guess, be able to move around the factory. A 4-hour battery life is probably not as exciting a scenario for a sci-fi movie where the robots turn bad, but I got it. They do make it nice and friendly, you know, muted colors. It looks like a coffee maker, so good on them.
Yeah. Well, and I think what they're also trying to do with the face is make it kind of fun, I guess, is the best way to put it. Like, it's not glowering at you. It's not just staring at you blankly. It has like these little words that pop up. Hi, hello, how can I help you? You know, that kind of thing. It's not giving you the Terminator stare. You know, so it's like,
I was intrigued. I mean, so you mentioned the 4-hour battery life. I'm like, well, but I'm sure it's got superhuman strength. No, it can lift about 50 pounds. Like, all right. So it's also probably not likely to crush you in a vehicle or something. It's called Apollo.
It might get it's outdoor Big Brother might crush you, but inside factory you're fine. But you know what? It's interesting because it talks to something that I interviewed Professor Ken Goldberg from UC Berkeley a couple of weeks back. And he brought that up about why you would want a robot with legs, because, like, you know, you would think in a warehouse, it should be on wheels. It should be, you know, something like that. But you could just slide this thing directly into where the human was standing and not have to make accommodations for size, for width, things like that. I mean,
yeah, battery life, you don't need a power supply there either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and think about it. If we changed it enough so that the power supply was next to it, pop this battery off, put another battery on, the assembly line keeps going.
Yeah, no union breaks there. But it would be fascinating. if humans are expected to work longer per segment than a robot is. I hear you. Well, let's get to Bill Gates, one of many luminaries in the space, and what he has to say about artificial intelligence. Here we go.
Well, okay. So, you know, we're looking at how these robots are going to be implemented, like in what area. Professor Goldberg, for example, said robots are great for hazardous environments like natural disasters and space and other planets and things like that. But what Gates is talking about is that AI and robots and things like that will also be integrated into like healthcare and agriculture.
Right.
And
you talked a lot about that.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting because one of the things that you see in a lot of science fiction movies, for example, are agriculture robots, like off in the distance, harvesting, things like that. Yeah. Dune famously has its harvesters. And, you know, that that to me is where you're probably going to see a lot of mass implementation, because you're basically, you don't really need to worry about space as an in a field. You just need to space them out so that that robot goes that way, that robot goes that way.
Right.
And it's just doing its thing. Where the AI part comes into, kind of like with your Roomba or your, you know, lawnmower robot, it has to know when to stop. So what the AI is going to do is it's going to learn the perimeter of the field. And then turn this way, turn that way, right?
Yeah, well, but one of my tech startups that I co-founded was an ag tech precision agriculture thing, and sort of the combination of that and drones for aerial surveying and everything. So it's pretty cool. And agriculture being pretty important in terms of maximizing the yield of very limited land space. I should mention that this article is drawn from another long, wide-ranging conversation with a couple of podcasters, and they covered all kinds of stuff, even like, you know, what does he do when he's bored? He likes to play Wordle, and I forget what he plays bridge. Like, okay, this is fascinating, question mark. And the conversation happened in India, where they were talking about, you know, the use of technology to help with healthcare and agriculture and things like that.
And I think it's interesting that the conversation did start in India, because the India, Google cutting out Gemini's ability to respond to political questions started in India.
Right. That's right.
And it's, I mean, it could be, as far as what Gates is working on, it could be a territorial environmental reason for him focusing on it. But it could also be the fact that India has so many people and so much land that mass adoption in India wouldn't really take very long, you know, as opposed to in other countries that have limited space, limited farmland, things like that. Like AI was just introduced in LA last week with the Waymo cars.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And people lost their minds behind them, you know, because you have this driverless car. You're sitting in the passenger seat or the back seat, and it's just doing its thing. And people were brake checking it, you know, getting in front of it, hitting their brakes to see if it stops. Things like that. So, you know, mass adoption has its highs and lows.
For sure.
But the other thing that Gates brought up was that free work.
Right.
And that stuck out to me, because what do you mean by free? You know, like, a lot of people have a fear that AI is going to replace them in the workforce.
Right, right.
Right. Because once you buy it, you don't have to pay it. You just have to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for the 1,000 workers you used to employ now that you have this thing?
Just like the factory workers still. I think, though, that he makes a pretty good case that in the long term, it's still a net benefit. Like, he has this overall conversation is very optimistic about artificial intelligence, but he does talk about it's going to be disruptive and things are going to have to adapt. We're going to have to change how we value someone's output, their productivity. But he said, even if it turns out that an AI is better at running a global charity to work on human health, then fine, he'll let the robot do all of the work, because if it can do it better than him, then he'll just go back to playing Wordle and bridge. So
I never could get into Wordle. I was just gonna say that it's gonna be an interesting thing to follow up on.
It'll always be covered on Emerge at Decrypt. In terms of crossover, you know, we spend a lot of time at Decrypt covering what the Securities and Exchange Commission is doing, what Gary Gensler is doing, what his own staff is criticizing him about, et cetera, about enforcement by, regulation by enforcement. And it looks like, although we cover mostly their crypto actions, the last few months, I think you did a pretty good recap in this article, the SEC has been paying more attention to artificial intelligence. Not specifically, you know, AI tokens being scams, but that people are saying that their investment companies, products are, you know, powered by AI. So give us your money. And it's all a lie.
Well, and it's, they call it AI washing. They mm-hmm. It's a Web3 version of greenwashing, which is basically, in greenwashing, you're telling the world your company is more eco-friendly than it actually is. Mm-hmm. With AI washing, you're telling the world that your company uses AI to an extent that isn't true. Like,
right.
To say that I use, or my law firm uses ChatGPT is one thing, but to say that my AI has the entire legal system uploaded for split second responses, that's AI washing. Because I'm trying to fool you into coming to my firm believing that my technology does that. And so what they did was they filed charges against a Canadian company, the US arm of a Canadian company called Delphi, and another called Global Predictions, which, you know, they didn't, no one was arrested, no one went to jail, anything like that. It was just, hey, stop doing that and pay this fine, you know. And so they had them pay an equivalent, it was about $400,000 total. Between the two, and civil penalties. And then they issued them a cease and desist order, so they had to change the verbiage on their website to, you know, clarify what their AI actually does.
What I think is interesting is that, you know, there are clearly some markets where some businesses where you're like, we're using AI and it makes you more attractive. Like, so when you're talking about trading and investments, maybe you're like, well, AI could probably pick stocks better than a human can, or can be able to day trade faster and better than a human can. I personally believe that is a true thing. But if you said, you know, my law firm uses AI, probably not going to encourage people to pick you as a vendor. So,
right. And, you know, snake oil salesmen are nothing new. They just have a new brand of snake oil to sell you. So, you know, that's why you always have to do your due diligence before you start giving people your money.
Yeah, a couple more stories, I think, before we run out of time. Speaking to regulatory actions and interest, we've been covering more on the emerging tech side, or on the market side, you know, Reddit, and it's going to go public, everyone's favorite controversial social media discussion platform. And it's been doing all sorts of things leading up to this IPO, including, for me, the most heinous action, which was cutting off third-party apps, because the Reddit app is terrible, and so I spend very little time on Reddit now. But in addition to battening down the hatches and such, they made a deal with Google to say, hey, Google, you can consume all of the content here on Reddit to make your artificial intelligence models better. If we can get better search, you know, indexing of our content, and presumably greater reach to the general Google search audience. But as a result of that announcement, I think last week, they just filed a new amended statement with the SEC that, by the way, I mean, it was, you know, not the headline of their filing, but it was, if you just read it closely, they're saying, in terms of the things that might affect the marketability of our IPO, we just happened to have gotten a letter yesterday, like literally yesterday, according to the filing, that the FTC would like to know a little bit more about this data licensing.
Well, we also have to point out that this deal with Google is worth $60 million. Mm-hmm. And it's the Reddit, people on Reddit, like the users, they're on the spectrum of this is great to this is evil, you know. And I thought it was interesting because people actually pointed out, well, how do you get rid of all the toxic language and discourse on this website so that it's not popping up in people's Google searches?
Right.
That's going to be very interesting for them to do. So the Reddit in the filing is like, we're not surprised that the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, expressed concern. And they said they don't believe that they've engaged in any unfair or deceptive trade practices. The reason why that comes out is because they're about to file an IPO.
Right.
And saying that we have a $60 million deal with Google is going to help that IPO. I mean, it is. Why wouldn't it? It just makes sense that it would. But they have to skirt that line because before we were just a social media platform. Now we're a publicly traded social media platform. So we just can't just throw out stuff like we used to and not expect the government to say, you know, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, the rules that cover a publicly traded company are a little more strict than what I think Reddit is used to. I do want to get back to what you said about, like, for example, our good friend in sarcastic quotes, Elon Musk, and developing his own AI and Grok, and very proud that it's trained on Twitter data. And there's also the subset of humans who will say, that is like the most garbage set of data you could possibly want a large language model to be based on. And I mean, Reddit, I love Reddit. It's not 4chan, but in terms of the corpus of data that is contained therein, I would not call it a hub of friendly and constructive collaborative conversation. So it sounds to me that an AI trained on Reddit might be kind of angry. I don't know.
well, that's kind of the concern that people have. I mean, I use Grok. It's because it's right there on your Twitter account. If you have the premium subscription, I think it is.
You have a premium subscription? Oh my gosh! All right, so tell me, what's Grok like?
It's useful if you're wanting to find out what someone said. So, like, you know, when did Elon Musk, you know, mention the launch of Grok? Put that in Grok. It searches Elon Musk, searches his tweets, and pops up responses that mention him and Grok together. And then you can click on the tweet and go to it.
Sure.
Which I think is it's valuable, especially in our profession where we're trying to verify somebody said something. I don't like its fun version because that's the version that talks crap to you.
Yeah, they're referencing.
I don't think that's necessary. That's not a necessary feature. It's interesting, but you know, I don't need my anxiety tweaked by another chatbot, so I leave that part alone.
What would be kind of interesting is like a crypto Twitter like variant of Grok, or you could probably test this yourself, like, you know, a way to keep track of all of the meme coins and airdrops and all of that stuff, because that's what we do at Decrypt. And, you know, perhaps using the tool to keep on top of these things might be a good idea. But yeah, Reddit or Twitter, fascinating data sources for AI. I think I might stick with the ones trained on a more diverse set of data.
Well, in fairness, Grok is becoming open source. So you're going to start seeing more versions of Grok coming out. And once that happens, you'll be able to, you'll get like what you're saying here. I think the other upside to more versions of Grok, ChatGPT coming out is that hopefully it makes the cost of using these things go down. Because like, I'm paying $22 for premium on Twitter. ChatGPT is $20. Midjourney's $30. There's another one. Leo on Brave is $15.
Right.
So it's like, okay, I can have a chatbot or I can have an HBO subscription.
Right. Well, I was about to say, it's sort of becoming having to pick and choose which streaming service you're going to watch media on, which AI tools you're going to use. I hear you.
Right.
Well, let's wrap things up going back to humanoid robots. And I think where this conversation started last week was the good folks over at Figure, which were already working on this space, but just prior had made a deal with OpenAI to use OpenAI technology in their humanoid robots, which were well on their way to development. But this demo was pretty mind-blowing because they have their robots, but now it can interact and think with the power of OpenAI's technology. What did you think about this?
I thought it was very interesting. And it actually circles back to our conversation about NVIDIA, because apparently NVIDIA is working with Figure 2 in their AI robotics project as well.
Right.
So, and then I don't know if this is true or not, so take it with a bucket of salt, but the voice of the robot is apparently Jared Leto.
That's what they said, yeah.
That's what, and I'm like, okay, that's random, but okay. But what I thought was the best part of the demonstration was that it was able to do more than one thing at the same time.
Right.
So like, right. It could talk to you while it's cleaning the kitchen. And that's very interesting, because normally when you have a program, it can do one thing and only one thing until it's done, and then it can do something else. This thing is... Well, here you go. Look at the video. So
yeah, well, humans aren't that good at multitasking already. So I think many spouses might say, you know, my partner can't do more than one thing. If I'm asking him to clean the kitchen, if I talk to him, it's not going to work.
And there goes our workforce right there. So yeah. It's like, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy. But it's interesting that in the video that we're watching, you can't hear it, but he's actually speaking to the developer at the same time. And it handed off an apple, because the programmer, I think his name is Corey Lynch, the senior engineer, asked it for something to eat. And of all the things on that table that it could have given him, it gave him the apple, because it recognized that that's edible.
Right. I thought that was, two things about the demo that stood out. One, he just said, I'm hungry. And the robot and the AI was able to say, well, I'm not going to hand him a plate or a pile of trash. I'm going to give him the apple. The other thing, of course, was that the prop that they decided to use was an apple. Like, do we want to make biblical references here right out of the gate?
In fairness, it wasn't a pomegranate. So as long we're good.
What I do like about these demos, since the Google controversy from about a year, or maybe 6 months ago, was that they're not speeding up the video. They're not editing out the pauses. Like, so it is a little awkward, because he'll ask the question and the robot will take like 3 seconds to figure out what to do. But what's exciting to me about that is that we're going to see a demo just like this in 6 months, a demo just like this in a year. And we're going to remember when that robot was kind of slow and had to think for it a bit before it did it. Like, it's going to rapidly advance. And using the new chips like announced by NVIDIA, I think it's going to be close to real time. Soon you'll be able to banter and tell jokes with a robot while he cleans your house. And that's not a terrible thing, as long as it decides that you're not the messiest thing in the house and the problem is to remove you.
Well, I think it's helpful to always remember that this stuff is only as far as what we're seeing. I mean, they've been developing this stuff for nearly a decade, if not more. But from when we first started playing with GPT-3 to this has only been a year and 2 months.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's phenomenal development in a really short amount of time. So 2-3 years from now, I can't imagine this stuff not being for sale to the general public by then.
Yeah. I mean, you might ask yourself why, when what we have here is the most powerful, most well-resourced companies in the world are focused on this problem and perhaps not other problems that might sustain humanity longer. But this is the competitive landscape we're in. This is where people want to be in the lead. We're publishing a interview that Sam Altman did again with Lex Fridman over the weekend. And he basically talks about the race to AGI, artificial general intelligence. And it's an arms race. It's going to be a fist fight. But to people who are excited about these things and not scared about these things, it is exciting to imagine where we're going to be, just considering how far we've gone from the very first release of ChatGPT.
Yes, indeed. And we will be there covering it all. What do you think, Ryan? We got 35 minutes in.
Yeah, I think we covered more stories than usual. We appreciate, again, everyone tuning in, whether you're watching us on LinkedIn or YouTube or on X/Twitter. We can also get your comments here, so we'll try to do a better job of integrating that over time. Again, we appreciate your patience as we get our podcasting/video streaming legs and as we take and learn lessons from our new partners over at Rug Radio. I'm Ryan Ozawa. This is Decrypting AI. Jason, where can folks find us and our work?
All right, everybody. If you'd like to follow us on social media, I am at Dragon Wolf Tech and Ryan is at Hawaii, the best Twitter handle ever. And you can find all of our work at decrypt.co.
Fantastic. Well, Jason, it's been fun. Have fun at the conferences. Looking forward to your photos and your coverage. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.